Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, there are plenty of stresses and strains that we face daily, some physical, some mental. Generally, we know how to take care of our physical aches and pains, but what about the mental side? How do we make sure that we are taking care of our mental health, and how and when should we seek help if we feel that we need it? Tonight, mental health is our focus. Tonight, our guest in studio is Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey. She's the Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like you to join the conversation if you have some questions about how to seek mental health, or you have some advice for those out there who may be struggling with similar issues that you have. We want to hear from you. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And again, our guest tonight is Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey. She's the Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County. Dr. Harvey, we know May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Is there a way to define mental health? What is mental health? How do we know we have good mental health, or we're suffering from maybe some negative effects of mental health on the other side?
So mental health pretty much encompasses your thinking, your mood, and your behavior.
Just over 24 hours ago, President Trump seemed to...
You have good mental health if, for the most part, you're feeling good about your life, you're feeling good about your relationships, family, and those kinds of things. But sometimes, as human beings, we encounter stress, as you mentioned, every day. Sometimes we're not at our most healthy physically as well. And even in some situations, we have good events that bring on stress. For example, a new job, planning a wedding, moving. All of those things are actually stressors because they are significant events in our lives. And so those situations usually end well. They're positive things. But sometimes if those negative feelings go on for more than 2 weeks, for example, where you're not doing what you typically do, where if, for example, you're a person who has no trouble getting out of bed in the morning, getting ready for work, you know, going through your day, you find that somehow you're having much more difficulty waking up, or you're dragging and, you know, really not having the energy. That's a beginning of some symptoms. Now, to be really clear, there are physical conditions that can look like mental health problems. So it's really important when you start feeling different and it's persisting, that you actually go to a professional. And most commonly, people will go to a physician. And that's entirely appropriate, because most physicians at this point understand that the mind and the body are not separate. And so they will do their standard assessment. And if it's not showing any physical symptoms, then the next questions need to be about how are you doing emotionally and what's going on in your life and what kinds of stresses are you facing and whether you have sufficient coping supports, sufficient resources to help you manage those stresses. Because if you don't have those resources, that's when those things are likely to take a turn for the worst.
How do you know when it's a situation where you need to seek help just with a counselor or a professional, or when you have to take medication? Because we do know that many people do not want to deal with medication. They're afraid of medication. We also know folks are afraid of going to see, quote unquote, a shrink. And we can talk about specific groups where stereotypically maybe there's a sense of folks may not be willing to go seek help. So how do you know whether it's medication or you need to sit down and talk to someone?
Well, I think the first thing you want to consider is talking to someone who's a professional, because the average person is not going to know whether the feelings that they have and what they're experiencing is something that can be treated with medication or not. Certain really, really severe situations do need medication. That's not what the average person experiences when they have some mental health challenges. Most people, and the most common forms of challenges, usually a depression and anxiety. And at any point in our lives, things happen to us and we experience that. So regular depression, if you want to call it that, because something has happened and you can identify that issue and it passes within a reasonable time, not necessarily needing any attention other than what you would normally do. You know, being with friends, going out, socializing, talking about it. Because again, we're not afraid to talk about what we see as the regular stuff. But if, again, you see a consistency where the symptoms aren't changing, that maybe that situation that brought on those sad feelings has passed, but yet you're still struggling, then there's probably something more serious going on. And it's worth it because you want to take care of yourself to go and ask somebody to have a full assessment done where that person will get a good history. And the likelihood is that whatever's going on, if you're still able to come in, if you stay still able to participate in treatment, that's not going to need medication. But there's a separate note, though, I need to point out, that we have no trouble taking medication about a lot of things. There are many medical conditions that if we changed our lifestyle, if we exercised more and watched what we eat, we wouldn't need any medication at all. But we don't judge people because they continue to have medication. So it's unfortunate that we judge people if they're taking psychiatric medication, where we are a nation where medication is understood as something that's helpful. So if you do need medication, that's not a bad thing.
It's the stigma of, am I crazy?
Exactly.
I'm not crazy. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our discussion tonight is on mental health. It is Mental Health Awareness Month. Joining us for this conversation is Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey. She's the Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County. We'd like to hear from you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Harvey, you talked about that your physical can affect your mental. But how do you get over the stigma if you're that person who thinks you need some kind of counseling? And as I mentioned, no one wants to think they're crazy and no mm-hmm. one wants anyone to think they're crazy.
Right.
And so there are communities, I would say, maybe even so the African-American community, I'm not going to tell my business to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That stays in-house.
Right.
How do you overcome those apprehensions that may be historically and culturally based?
So the term crazy does have a certain image to it, right? It's somebody that we think of as a lunatic, somebody who's totally out of control, looks totally, you know, inappropriate and doing very, very bizarre things. That is a very rare condition. And so the likelihood is that even if you have mental health challenges, you're absolutely not crazy. You are dealing with something in your life that is presenting problems for you. And getting help and having that assessed very early will have those symptoms addressed and people will be fine. So it's the delaying and worrying, which is actually making your condition worse now because you're worrying about it and you're not getting any help. You're probably not talking with anyone at all. So you're living with this by yourself. Now you're isolated, and isolation is something we don't do well in anyway. So the likelihood of things getting worse is greater if you're not talking, if you're isolated and afraid to let anybody know. And it's important, again, that you go to someone that you trust. So if someone is a person of faith, prayer is a good thing. Prayer is shown to help people recover.
Hmm.
Praying is not contrary to treatment. Those two things are important if that's something that you believe in. And when we have a belief system that gives us strength and support, we need to use that. So there are clinicians who come from a faith background who can talk with someone for whom that is a priority. However, an example, though, if your faith is important and the manifestation of that faith is being part of, you know, a church group and going to church regularly, but you find that you're not able to get up in the morning and actually get to church, then that should tell you something is not as it should be. And if you need to have that conversation with someone whose background is more spiritually based, those individuals are available.
Dr. Duval, the county, Prince George's County, they have a new program called Step forward. Talk a little bit about that and what the emphasis is, why the program exists, and what are the goals of the program?
So the primary goal is to help people understand that mental illness is on the same continuum as physical illness. None of us is 100% physically healthy. Most of us fluctuate back and forth, and mental health is the same. So there are times, as I said before, when we have stresses in our lives and we have some difficulty coping, maybe because we're tired, maybe we're working a lot, maybe our friends, you know, not around, maybe we in some other place. So for example, for young people, going away to college and for the first time being away from family and friends and being surrounded by strangers can be a precipitating factor to mental illness. One of the individuals, when we launched the campaign this early May, talked about bipolar symptoms showing for the first time when he was away at college and not knowing who to trust because everyone around him was a stranger and he was afraid. And, you know, you're not going to walk up to the average person and say, I think I'm losing my mind, mm-hmm. right? So for a long time, he was not able to get help until eventually he came back home. That may not have happened in the same way had he been home with family. But again, being away, the pressure of succeeding in school, the pressure of making new friends, created a situation that the symptoms started to show themselves. Fortunately, he was able to get help and do wonderfully well and talk about it now because he wants young people to understand that these things are transient and manageable. And he's actually not on medication at this point. So the stigma is because of what we see sometimes on television. We see these portrayals of people, again, as crazy, quote unquote. But that's not what mental illness looks like for the general population.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. It is Mental Health Awareness Month. That is our focus tonight. Dr. Jacqueline Duval-Harvey, Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County, is with us, and we'd like to hear from you. Let's go to the phones now. Greg calling from Falls Church. Go right ahead, Greg, with your question or your comment.
Well, my question is, I have a loved one, actually my sister, who's in and out of the mental health system. Actually in the state of Mississippi. And she's actually just recently went back. This is probably about her fourth time into the hospital in about over the course of 2 years. But the problem is she gets out and she don't take her medicine. And it spirals out of control even more so when she doesn't take her medicine. So my question is, what are some suggestions or options to make sure she takes her medicine?
Thank you, Greg. Doctor?
So that is a really important question because when people don't take the medicine, as you know, and I'm sure you're seeing with your sister, the symptoms come back. One of the things that we're finding is very important is for individuals to have peer supports in their lives because there's often a lot of shame people feel and talking to family about their illness is not very comfortable. But talking to others who've had those symptoms, who can help them understand what they're going through because that person has experienced it, to help them know that they can recover and to really give them tips and guidance and suggestions about when they may be struggling and symptoms, signs when, you know, they start to feel better and say, okay, therefore I don't need the medicine anymore. Say, well, no, that's when you really need to make sure you take it. So peer-supported activities are really helpful because, again, there's no stigma because that person has gone through the illness. They can talk from direct experience about the feelings and the changes in the body that the medication sometimes shows. They can even make recommendations by going back to the doctor because sometimes people don't like how they actually feel on medication. So that's important information for that physician to have. And that peer support specialist can help that individual in some ways that family who don't have that experience can't really relate to.
Tonight, we are talking about mental health. It is Mental Health Awareness Month and how to take care of your mental health. We want to hear from you, 202-319-7810. Right now, we're going to take a break. But we're going to come back on the SiriusXM side. So if you're on the phone, Sarah and Danielle, stay right there. We will get to you. I am Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us for this conversation on mental health. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, it is Mental Health Awareness Month, and tonight we are focusing on mental health, how to have the best mental health, and how to know when to seek help when you feel like you may be a little off kilter, things don't feel right. We know physically when things don't feel right, we go to the doctor, but do we do the same when we're having some mental issues, or do we just feel like it'll pass? It's just I've got the blues. It's not sunny outside today. How to know when to seek the help that you need, or either how to cope with things without getting professional help? We're talking about that tonight. Joining us is Dr. Jacqueline Duval. Duval Harvey. She's the deputy health officer with Prince George's County, and we'd like to hear from you. Phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Sarah calling from Glen Burnie, Maryland. Go right ahead, Sarah.
Yes. The problem that I'm having, my husband passed away a little over 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still in the grieving process.
Okay.
I can't get over it. It's just continuous. I have no motivation, no interest. No, nothing. All of his things are still here. And I just don't know what to do. I can't go to those meetings because I can't stand to hear all the stories that people, you know, can tell about losing someone that they love.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to do.
I want to see if Dr. Harvey can help.
Okay.
So Sarah, sometimes grief does go on for a long time. Oh, it really depends on the circumstances before, and I don't really have a lot of history in terms of your condition or your situation, rather. And I probably wouldn't want you to talk too much about it on the phone. So let me try to say a couple of things, and if we need to, we can take your number and call you back.
Okay.
And talk, you know, more directly, and you can be able to share some things later.
Okay.
So typically, and this is not necessarily your situation, but typically when grief from mourning, from having losing a loved one occurs, that grief is usually much more temporary. And you've identified it as going on too long, that you feel at this point you should be further along or making some changes in your life in terms of, you know, his belongings and all of that. So I'm understanding that you feel it's time now, something should be different. Typically what happens, why grief does last longer, is because in some cases there's been some depressive feelings before the actual grief experience. So it's the coupling of both of those things that were going on before that allows the grief to continue, because the things that happened before haven't been resolved yet. The death has occurred, but that doesn't end all of the previous feelings and the previous issues that were there before. And in some cases, the death means that there's not an opportunity to actually resolve those things, because if it involved the individual, your husband, then he's no longer there for you to talk with and to confront or to resolve the issues. And so it can be very difficult if there's been depression or some serious incidents before the actual death occurred. Again, I'm not necessarily saying this is your situation,
but typically
that's what we see when, for the individual, they have a sense that the grief is prolonged.
Thank you so much, Sarah, and best of luck with everything. We appreciate your call.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight, we're talking about the stresses that many of us deal with daily. And what effect does that have on our mental health, and how do we stay mentally strong? How do we seek out advice to help us do that? How do we make sure we can get up out of the bed every day and not pull the covers over our head? Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey, Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County, is here to help guide us in this conversation. Again, it is Mental Health Awareness Month. Dr. Harvey, I did want to, you know, there's some just some stats out there that are astounding. One of those that I came across, nearly one in 25 adults in America live with a serious mental health illness. The question I have is, how do we define serious in terms of mental health? And just as you said, I've got, you know, for a week, I can't get out of bed.
So it is a situation where there's actually a diagnosis that requires treatment. And so, you know, we talked about depression. Again, if that's fluctuating because of bad weather or, you know, tiredness, fatigue, you know, on any of those situations, that will pretty much pass. But if it's going on for much longer, and as I said, it's 2 weeks, or if the person is actually, you know, having suicidal thoughts, thinking that, you know, they want to end their lives, clearly that's something that is urgent. So we use the 2 week period for general issues, but if it's something where they're having those thoughts, then that's an immediate need. And that's where you immediately want to call, you know, call for help, call a crisis text line, call, you know, a regular phone. All of those mechanisms are available immediately. And if necessary, there can be an immediate response if it's a life-threatening situation. So if you have family or friends that you suspect are in a very serious state around depression, better to get help and have it be resolved or not needed than to say, well, no, I'll wait, and then something really tragic happens, and you say, I should have done that. So it's better to be safe than sorry.
Important information being shared tonight in terms of mental health. 202-319-7810. Your questions, your comments. A doctor is in the house, so this is your opportunity. If you have some questions, if you're looking for some advice, this is a great time to give us a call. Dr. Duval Harvey is also a clinical psychologist, and she is licensed. So, again, it is free advice, and you can't beat free. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Danielle calling from Bowie. Go right ahead, Danielle.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. Mm-hmm. I'm a high school student, and I left school because I was too stressed out. I had so much anxiety that I was going to fail and that I wasn't going to do good. And my comment is, what do you do in that situation? Because I didn't have a lot of friends. Most of my friends were older than me. They graduated. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have that support. And a lot of teenagers now, my age in high school or middle school, don't really have that kind of support system because they either don't want to have friends, they don't know how to make friends, or they just shut people out. So it is a struggle. So what can someone do my age or around, like 15 to 18, what can we do to help ourselves?
So there's a lot you can do. So if you have any immediate concerns about what's going on with you, you know, there are text lines that you can use where you can as often as you want to, you can text and get a response and have a conversation with a licensed person who can help you go through, you know, help you manage whatever's going on a regular basis. Now, that's not sufficient if you think this is more than episodes of issues with friends or with worrying about not doing well. Have you been doing well in school?
It's usually more than that.
Well, how are your grades?
They were really terrible. I was like back and forth in and out of class. I was just like having regular like episodes in school. I'd be crying and I'd feel as if I couldn't do things and I had nobody to talk to about it. And even when I went to teachers or guidance counselors, they wouldn't know what to say or do.
Okay.
And it was even with like crisis situations, even when I was crying in the hallway, mm-hmm. I just needed a little bit of space to breathe. It would be like an immediate crisis for security or administration, and they just want to rip me out of my own little bubble, and it didn't really help. So that's my thing. I don't really understand what to do in those kind of situations. When I'm in a crisis, I try breathing, you know, coping skills, activities, drawing, music, but when I'm in the moment, and a lot of people, when they're in the moment, it's like those things don't push through. It's in the ear and out the other ear. It doesn't really matter. Only my issue matters, basically.
Well, and that's important. And I want to tell you that I'm proud of the fact that you got on this call.
Yes.
And can share that information, because a lot of young people are going through some of the same things you're going through, but they're not able to talk about it. And let me ask you, in terms of when you're feeling like you need support, you need help, who can you turn to? Is there anyone in your life that you go to?
My school had this thing called Bowie Youth and Family Services, and I joined the mentoring service, and they really helped me. I mean, I had a mentor who was on call 24/7 with me, who actually understood me and decided to talk to me about things, because she's been through the same things I've been through mentally, physically, and emotionally. So that really helped me, having a mentor, having somebody there to talk to. And sometimes I'd even come to my dad. Even though my dad irritates me and he's so annoying, and he's sitting right here, but he really helped me get through a lot.
So it sounds like your dad is a good support in your life.
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like you recognize that things are serious and you want help. So if we give you a series of numbers and places where you can actually go for help, is that something that you would be willing to do?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to get your number. And after the show, I will call you and we will make a connection for you in the Bowie area. We can have somebody, actually, there are community health workers that we have across the county who can come to your home, sit with your family, discuss with you whatever arrangements need to be made, because some people can get services at reduced costs, you know, your insurance, all of these issues. They can work with you very directly and connect you to care. And, you know, again, you need to go and see these individuals and make sure you feel comfortable with them. And if it's the first one or the second one or the third one, you keep going until you feel like this is the person you really feel like you can talk to. So definitely make sure we have your information and we'll connect you to some treatment services. And your dad is there to support you. So, you know, hang in there, because we'll get you some help.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Danielle, and best of luck to you. And we'll make sure that you give the information to our producer, okay? So just stay on the line. You know, Danielle, I'm going to call her Denzel. Danielle's call was so poignant, because the next thing I was going to go to were, again, some of these statistics saying, you know, 13 to 18. I know she said 15 to 18. But I know studies have shown about 20%. Of teenagers 13 to 18 are dealing with some kind of mental issue. And we know today, doctor, or at least it seems, that the pressures are so much greater on young people, especially teenagers.
Sure.
And so she talked about what she had in her school. Can you talk about how important it is for schools to have some kind of support there for students? We're not talking about what high school or college to go to next, but some kind of support to deal with those things. And how is it unique? Is that an issue that there's not enough of that in our schools today?
So there's not enough, because for me, enough would be that every school has on staff a full-time licensed clinician, and a clinician who is entirely devoted only to working with children, you know, who are not in special ed, because we have special ed services, but those are very different from what we're talking about now. So there are many communities that have school mental health services. In Prince George's County, for example, when we started out with the Transforming Neighborhood Initiatives, TNI, which was really a policing and economic development initiative, it became very clear very early that mental health supports were needed. And so we have clinicians in the public schools in many counties. So that's a growing movement, and it's very effective. When I actually came to the state of Maryland from New York, I was actually a school-based clinician in East Baltimore. And I know that it works, and children actually had no trouble coming for help. In fact, they would come and bring their friends and say, Dr. Harvey, I know this person needs to see you as well. So the children aren't an issue. Sometimes it's difficult getting the parents to sign up, because I'll also mention that we can see signs of challenges in young people as early as age 3. but they don't get help at all until age 10 and 12.
And I want to talk about that, about getting help. What are some of the barriers to getting help when it's recognized, it's needed, and it's cost one of those barriers? And I know we talked about, too, image and cultural things that sort of get in the way. But I want to talk a little bit about that. So we've got plenty more to talk about. Phone lines are still open. We want to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about good mental health, how to stay strong mentally. Jolene, stay on the line. You've been waiting patiently. We'll get to you after we take this quick timeout. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, our conversation centers on taking care of ourselves mentally. Our physical helps our mental, but how do we take care of ourselves mentally? We kind of know how to do it physically, but sometimes the mental aspect, we're not always sure. It is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are putting our focus on that tonight. Joining us in studio to talk about this issue is Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey, Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County, and she is a licensed clinical psychologist. So she is important here in terms of our conversation. She's giving great advice. Phone lines are still open. If you have questions or comments, we want to hear from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to Jolene calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Jolene, with your question or your comment.
Yes. A few years ago, I was diagnosed with severe depression. And I was talking to my therapist, and my therapist said that, you know, it's to deal with depression, it takes time. It's not necessarily something that you're going to resolve with a therapist in a year or two. And I wanted to get the comments about that. And then I have another question.
Okay, doctor.
So I can't really speak to that without getting a little bit of more your history, because I'm assuming there's some reasons why your physician said that. And again, I can't really speak to it without more information. Perhaps we can talk offline. Why don't you try your second question?
Okay. How does a person find the right clinician or therapist for them? How do they know when they found the right one? Because I know when I was looking for mine, it took time and it was hard, because every session, every time you had someone new, you had to open up these old wounds again. It was never opening up the wounds and going forward. So I would just like to hear your comments about that.
So the recommendation that we usually make is that you go to someone who you trust, and you ask them to give you three recommendations, and you visit each of those people, not necessarily with starting a full relationship, but simply saying to them, I am interested in getting help on a particular issue, and you can share some information, and I want to make sure that you are the right fit for me. And so they understand that that's why you're coming, and they will talk with you, and you have an opportunity to ask questions, because there may be some things in particular that you want. So, for example, some people may prefer a male therapist or a female therapist. Some people may prefer somebody who's experienced in a certain area, because that's the kind of treatment that they want because they've done some research. Some people may want to have a particular person in a particular area of a community. You know, we all have particular things that are important to us. So those things are important to put out on the table. So the recommendation, as I said, is you get three names, you schedule appointments with each of those people, ask them the particular questions that you have that conversation with them, see how comfortable you feel whether the responses are making sense to you. And after you've talked with all three, don't stop at one if you think this one is great. Talk to the other two, and then make a decision. Hopefully, one of the three will be a good fit. If neither of them are a good fit, get another set of recommendations of another three. It's an important investment, because, again, we can talk very comfortably about physical things, but the emotional stuff we keep very, very close to our hearts, and we can only share some of that with people that we trust. And if you're not comfortable with the person, you're not going to share that, and it's going to be a waste of time. So take the time to do the research, get the recommendations, follow through on those initial visits, and when you feel you have that right person, then be prepared to engage in the process and put the work into it and the energy into it in terms of getting what you need out of it. Some people go and won't share information, you know, and that's not helpful. Clinically, if someone is not making progress, it's actually the obligation of the clinician to say to you, listen, we've been working for 6 years, 5 years, one, you know, whatever the amount of time is, and I'm not seeing any progress. So I'm thinking that this is not working. Perhaps we can do something different, or perhaps you need something else. So an ethical therapist will tell you that as well. And it's important, like I said, from the very beginning to make sure the individual is licensed. Make sure once you've made the decision to choose that person, there is a comprehensive assessment done. If there are any medical situations that may be involved, that they recommend and have you go to a physician to rule out whether these are psychiatric symptoms that are secondary to a medical problem, first of all. And if they're not, then you continue the treatment. And you can do the treatment with a psychologist or a social worker who's licensed while you're getting medical care if that works well for you and if that's what you feel you need. But absolutely make sure it's a licensed individual. And be careful, because people can actually call themselves therapist. That term has no licensure requirement, no credential behind it. A person can simply put a sign out and say, I'm a therapist, and that's legal. So ask to see the person's qualifications, ask to see the person's license. You can actually check online to see if a person is licensed as well.
All right. Thank you so much, Jolene, and good luck with all of your research and your treatment. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. Dr. Harvey is with us, Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey. She is the health officer with Prince George's County and also a licensed clinical psychologist. Our conversation tonight is mental health and good mental health, how to take care of ourselves mentally. Dr. Harvey, I want to talk a little bit about cost and whether or not that is a barrier for folks in getting any type of treatment, whether it's drug treatment, whether it's counseling. Where does cost play into folks getting or not getting the treatment that they need?
So Maryland is actually a really, really great state around making sure that there's parity in medical care and psychiatric care. So most people who have insurance, there is mental health support as part of that packet. Even in employment situations, you have employers who provide what they call employee assistance programs. In Prince George's County, for example, you can get up to 4 sessions entirely free of charge. But in some cases, though, there's a shortage of psychiatrists, the individuals who can actually prescribe medication.
Why is that?
It's a specialty field, and a lot of people don't want to go through all of the rigmarole of the forms and the documentation. So many people actually don't accept insurance, don't accept medical assistance, and do entirely private pay. And so that makes it a little bit more difficult. But if you have insurance in the state of Maryland, you will be able to get treatment, because that should be part of your insurance package. The copay sometimes can be steep. Mm-hmm. But again, that is part of what people can get. And in some cases, there are organizations that will provide services free of charge if you are unable to afford treatment. So that's something that can happen as well. We have a clinic in Cheverly. The health department has a clinic where people can come in, and if they can't make payment, we have an opportunity both for a sliding scale as well as services that can be provided for individuals who cannot pay, because we want to make sure as a public health entity that people get the care that they need.
In our few moments that we have left, I want to talk about what's going on in terms of our prison system. We know, again, statistics are out there showing about 70% of the juveniles who are in the system have mental illness issues. That number is amazing. 70%.
Absolutely.
What does that say about how we're dealing with mental health issues?
Well, it speaks also to the experiences our young people are facing. So when you think about the fact that in certain communities, you're more likely to die from a homicide at age 17 and 18 than you are from dying at an old age peacefully in your sleep, that's a whole different dynamic. We have a lot of young people who've had what they call stressful life events, where they are not living in healthy communities, where the examples of what they see are not positive. And so when you live in those conditions, it's a stressor that you're living with, and it almost simulates sort of a war environment, you know, and so that becomes a major problem.
You mentioned off air that with the prison system, in many ways, there is better treatment or either more treatment within the prison for prisoners than outside. Why is that?
Because they have recognized that a lot of what has brought the young people in has been unresolved issues, where their interpersonal skills are poor, where they are very angry because of the things that they've experienced in their childhood, the trauma that they've not been able to talk about and instead act out in a violent and aggressive way, which gets them into trouble, and the belief that they're just not going to live a long life, so they have a very immediate mentality of, you know, getting what they can get right now. And so those behaviors, those thoughts and feelings, with that temporariness of life, really create a situation where they end up putting themselves in danger and in risky situations and eventually leading to negative stuff and arrest. And so to help those youth leave that system, the mental health issues have to be addressed. And so the juvenile services are recognizing that treatment needs to happen, and those youth are actually getting that treatment now.
In our last minute, how important is quiet time? The music is playing, so you can give it to me in about 25 seconds. Really just having that time to let your mind rest. How important is that for your mental health?
It's extremely important. And how you do that is specific to individuals. For some people, it's music. For some people, it's quiet. For some people, it's art and creativity. For some people, it's good conversations. We want people to have healthy coping, not poor coping. So not drinking excessively, not using drugs to feel better, but things that are affirming and healthy for their bodies as well.
Dr. Jacqueline Duval Harvey, Deputy Health Officer with Prince George's County, a program that is in the county now, Step Forward. Find out about that in about 10 seconds. Dr. Harvey, how can folks contact you or the department if they need to?
If you look on our website, which is pghealthzone.org, you can find lots of information about Step Forward.
Great. Thank you so much. That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 30th. I'm Bramante Bryan in for Harold Fisher. Up next, The Connection with Lorna Newton. Have a great night.